Future of Finance podcast, where finance finds its future.
Hello, I'm Dominic Hobson, co-founder of Future of Finance. My guest today is Stephen Ashurst, co-founder and CEO of TokenBridge, a blockchain-based service for retail funds and fund distributors that uses tokenization to transform the infrastructure of the funds industry and enable wealth managers to engage more successfully with potential clients using digital technology. Stephen, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us and share your knowledge and insights with our members.
You're very welcome. It's a privilege to be here, Dominic. Nice to meet you.
The founders of TokenBridge have, if you look at their CVs, deep institutional asset and wealth management experience. What has that experience taught all of you about what's wrong with the funds industry as it's structured today?
Yeah, thank you. So it's a good point. I'd actually extend that by saying not only institutional experience, but distribution experience. So we would categorize that as being advice, basically, particularly for funds. So, and I think the lesson that we've all learned in that journey is there is a huge amount of friction in the industry, as we all know, that has grown up for perfectly valid reasons over time. You know, has reached a state really where the tech stack of asset and wealth management is now, you know, an encumbrance in its own right to profitability, to wider, you know, the wider economics of the industry, both in terms of issuance and distribution. And I think, as I suspect many of your listeners and members will agree with, you know, that friction is a headwind that we all face into. And I think we, you know, came together to found TokenBridge with a view to really removing that friction, and distributed ledgers, you know, kind of jumped out. And we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail, I suspect. But that's our background. And our background is, our mission is to not take out friction for the sake of it, but to widen, you know, our industry. And the more people that can get advice, we believe, it, the better, you know. And I think that's what we've learned and what we want to try and change.
So the tech stack is legacy. There's a lot of friction at a high level. That's your mission, is to take that out of the industry. At the risk of asking you the same question again, you mentioned there that you'd like to expand on this a little bit more detail. If I said to you what needs to be fixed in the funds industry and how TokenBridge is going about fixing it, can you be a bit more specific about what you're actually doing?
Yeah, sure. Let's characterize friction a bit more closely. So cost, complexity, latency, you know, and I think one of the promises of distributed ledgers is that those things can be resolved in the favor of the consumer and their advisor where they have one. You know, Chris Dixon, who's a general partner at A16Z, has just recently published a book called Read, Write, Own. And he's talking about Web3, you know, the promise of Web3 being the marriage of artificial intelligence and distributed ledgers, meaning that, you know, really good advice can be automated and ownership of that, in which is what we're all about, can be offered to the consumer, excuse me, and their advisor where they have one. So I think taking out that cost is the place to start, but one also takes out complexity and latency in the ownership of assets. And we would say, you know, and again, we can talk about this a little bit more, putting personalization into that mix as well starts to bring the consumer a result that they really want, which is low cost advice and, you know, investments in a competitive and personalized way. So those are the things that we're targeting, that those kind of frictions.
Oh, I'll definitely come back to personalization, but before I do, can I ask a very basic question? Is the TokenBridge offering aimed at asset managers or at wealth managers, what you might call fund distributors as well, or is it aimed at both of those groups?
Yeah, great question, Dominic. So we describe the world in two distinct halves, if you like. So issuers, and we start with mutual fund managers because that's an almost perfect use case for distributed ledgers. It's a type of over-the-counter transaction. There isn't a secondary market, et cetera. And it's full of cost and friction, as we've just discussed. So we say issuers will, and already are beginning to issue tokens. And that's on the one hand, and let's call those asset managers in your words. But in the future, that could extend to companies issuing shares or other exchange traded instruments like fixed income securities and ETFs, etc., all to follow. And on the other hand, we also deal with wealth managers, what we call distributors. So this could be IFAs, RIAs, private banks, you know, in the UK and the US. And we're saying to them, look, if tokenization is happening anyway in the market, you want to be able to access that and, you know, be on the front foot. So our solution plays a part in what issuers are doing with tokenization, but really becomes very, very useful for consumers and their advisors where they have one.
Just so I'm clear about something I think you just said, which is potentially very interesting. This is not just about funds in the long run. This is about the underlying assets, the underlying securities as well. Is that right? Is that what you just said?
I did say that. So yes, I think it's a journey. It's a horrible phrase, isn't it? But you know, it starts with mutual funds because, as I said, they're very easy to tokenize because there isn't a secondary market. So there's no requirement for exchange, or yet there isn't a secondary market. There's no requirement for exchange or collateralization, etc., in mutual funds. And we're talking about mainstream mutual funds here, not the more esoteric ones. But yes, exchange traded instruments, I think, will be tokenized. We're already seeing that with corporate bonds, in France in particular. But there are questions around liquidity, collateralization, exchange. And I think one of the constraints of tokenizing exchange traded instruments is the lack currently of a wholesale central bank digital currency. So everyone's having to use, make do with different types of private stable coins. And we think that, you know, when wholesale CBDCs are available, you'll see a real, real turbocharging of the tokenization of ETIs because, you know, counterparties will be able to rely on the currency being exchanged for the security, which currently is a problematic extra leg.
And as you embark on this long journey of transformation, how would you characterize what you're doing? Are you providing a blockchain platform to begin this transformation, or are you providing a blockchain service, or are you providing something completely different?
We're an aggregator. Mm-hmm. We have open architecture at our core, meaning whichever token is issued by whichever issuer on whichever blockchain, we will aggregate that. So currently, for example, in the US, you'd have to download WisdomTree Prime and Franklin Templeton's Benji apps as a consumer in order to take those and to buy those two tokens. And that's fine. But we think, or we know in an advised world, particularly around model portfolios, our white label aggregation software will enable consumers and their advisors, where they have one, to look at all of their tokens together in a single app. I think that's very important. You know, and we'll come on to talk about types of personalization tokens that we're also engineering, like KYC, letters of authority, and plan admin, and so on. You know, when all of that can be aggregated together, you're beginning to get to one of our end states, which is a personalized platform in your pocket. And I think that doesn't exist yet. There aren't enough, you know, tokenized securities or personalization data around at the moment, but that's definitely, we think, that the direction of travel.
Now, any token on any blockchain in a single app is a great vision. It's a bold claim. The first objection people would raise to that is this lack of interoperability between the various, not just between the various blockchain protocols, but between those blockchain protocols and the traditional industry as well. So lack of interoperability does seem to be a major obstacle to progress in tokenization in general. What lies behind what you've just said? How are you going to help us get to that vision of any token, any blockchain in one place?
Dominic, thank you. So our name actually means interoperability, and blockchains were designed to be interoperable from the blockchains themselves. If we just boil it down to the distributed ledger, it's designed to be interoperable. And there are lots of standards and protocols, you know, continually being published in support of that. I do take your point about TradFi. Our latest model portfolio design speaks to that, and we accept. Well, first of all, I think, you know, it's not a clever observation to say that somewhere in Germany or Switzerland today, somebody might be settling a fund transaction with a fax machine. So we know there are different types of technology in play all the time in our industry. But if we just focus on mainstream funds, which is our target, we do accept that TradFi will continue to be part of portfolio construction for a very long time. And so our model portfolio token actually has a hybrid function that can rebalance tokenized funds and untokenized assets, including fiat cash, for example, as well. So it can speak through an oracle, which, for those of your listeners who don't know, is a blockchain version of an API to either a general ledger for fiat cash or, a more traditional platform. So I think there's disruption here, but I don't think disintermediation, because different types of platform will continue to run in parallel for a very long time. Perhaps, without an endpoint. I think what's useful and interesting about blockchain and tokenized model portfolios is that they can interoperate with the outside world using very, very new techniques around, oracles and things like that. So that's our view of the world.
So you're aiming at the mainstream industry. You expect large parts of that mainstream industry, TradFi, let's call it that, will persist over time. Now, one of the objections that your potential users are going to raise is, oh, how difficult is this going to be for me to connect to have an interface to these services? How much budget do I have to find? How much complexity do I need to overcome? So how difficult and expensive is it going to be for your clients, potential clients, to make use of the services that TokenBridge is providing?
Yeah, great question. So we do all that work. So we connect all the blockchain networks. We do the aggregation. We are live with the top three UK wealth manager tool currently, and live minting and burning money market fund tokens on that. So we built that from scratch in 3 months. We have a large engineering team that's, blockchain focused. So our offer as a software company is obviously to do all that for clients, and we don't make an ad valorem charge. We have a flat in-app fee, which is what you'd pay in any app that's not freemium. Advisors will pay a small additional charge on top of that. And as a network play, we're saying to fund managers, when you've, and other security issuers for that matter, when you've tokenized your security, you can host it on our supermarket shelf, if you like. And as a network play, like iTunes allows artists to stream music, we intend, if we get our network to allow for managers to stream alpha, in the same way. And I think that's an endpoint again, Dominic, that doesn't exist at the moment. But our software, it's not hard to connect to blockchains. That's what they're designed to do, and we provide a view across that. So that bit we make as seamless as possible. And I suspect that, as a white label service, we will be mixed up and commingled with whatever wealth managers are offering in terms of app or laptop data presentation to their consumers currently. So, you might be another tab on an app which is around the tokenization bit.
You've used the word personalization more than once in this conversation. Now, this is a long-standing dream of the funds industry in particular, to move away from those generic investment products towards something which actually is tailored to the particular needs, right down to the level of the individual investor with their particular collection of assets and liabilities, looking, over a 40-year period even. Now, as I say, you've mentioned personalization quite a lot. What is that actually going to mean for your clients? Are we talking here about a kind of modernized version of a managed account, or we're talking about bespoking people's portfolios? And I also wondered what part tokenization plays in personalization. So tell us a bit more about what you mean by personalization, what your vision of it is, and what the tools you're going to use to bring it about are.
Yes, of course. So not everything needs to be tokenized. Not everything needs to be on a blockchain or a distributed ledger. In fact, I always set three tasks. Is there a need for the data to be accessible equally? Is there a need for the data to be transparent? And is there a need for the data to be trusted? If a use case passes those three tests, then one has a use case for tokenization. So in and of itself, personalization information is digitalized right now today. There are countless very advanced CRM systems out there that do that. But this is different. This is about programmability and control. So, and we also say that if issuers are taking friction and therefore cost and latency, et cetera, as we discussed, out of issuance through tokenization, and that's saving them, a significant cost saving on the traditional stack. The same is true for advisors. The advice stack can be tokenized too. And that means friction, latency, cost, and complexity is taken out. I can give you some example, and I should warn everyone that this is where it gets acronym rich. But letters of authority, LOA, KYC, AML. There's a long list of all of those things that advisors do, and it includes data capture and data reuse in all of those areas. Now, our approach, and we'll give you KYC as an example. It's in the public domain. One of our first customers is a KYC issuer at the moment. This is a subset of digital identity. Digital identity, by the way, I think is the preserve of government and will remain so. But KYC is a subset of that. It's a gas bill and a passport or a driving license checked. So one of our first customers, the Tracing Group, they do that currently for clients such as Santander and NatWest and Child Trust Funds and Lost Pensions. And we've developed a token at the end of their existing off-chain, this manual, basically KYC checking process. They're going to mint a new token called Valid VALID that has a yes, no flag on it and an expiry date. And that goes in the aggregator too. So the consumers only had to do their KYC once. It's been cryptographically sealed and the credentials validated, put into the aggregator, and can be used thereafter, in that way that I just described, equally accessible, transparent, and trusted. This is a big benefit for the consumer. They don't now have to do KYC multiple times. And assuming all the issuers accept that KYC, and many do, actually household names do at the moment with our first customer, you can see obviously immediately how useful that could be. We're proposing to actually extend that design so that each new regulated token, that consumer acquires in the aggregator increases their score by one. So it's like a credit score, and all the private information is off-chain. In fact, it's been burnt off-chain digitally, so it can't be hacked. And I think, that's a really good working example of that. But actually, advisors, a wealth manager, it will cost between 1,000, 1,500, £2,000 perhaps to go and see a client for the first time. So what if fact find, letters of authority, KYC, AML checks, and goals and objectives could be personalized and that could be put in the aggregator. And we're actually going to push that further. We're saying that ISAs, GIAs, perhaps SIPs, 401ks, IRAs can be tokenized too. And it's then gets to the place where it's programmable. So the tokens in the aggregator don't just represent personalization data, but they can do things like check an ISA subscription limit. Or the underlying token is one of the qualifying investments. So that doesn't exist yet at the moment, just to say that many times in this interview. But that's where we are projecting that the industry will travel to. And it's one of the things we call our thing is a personalized platform in your pocket. So, a bit like the Apple's iPod, it allows total flexibility of choice by the consumer. And a degree of automation that's not been possible before through tokenization. Tokenization doesn't solve everything, but it moves us a whole way forward.
Make sure I understand what you just explained. When you were talking there about making that whole AML, KYC, CFT process more efficient, you were at one level describing the resolution of a long-standing problem in the industry of this customer onboarding experience, if you like. Every time you buy a fund, you have to go through this process all over again with your gas bill and bank accounts and all that. And I can see that is a clear instance of taking friction out of the process. But if I understood you correctly, you're also thinking of this as a way of what we might call fund distributors, wealth managers, understanding their customers better and using that information to create for them investment portfolios which meet their needs more precisely than any product they have today. And then, in order to execute that improved, more bespoke portfolio, you think tokenization has a part to play. So there's like the three layers here: improved onboarding experience, more exact portfolios, and actually a tool for delivering those portfolios. Have I understood that correctly?
Yes, I think in broad terms that you absolutely have. Look, but this isn't optional. So, global wealth AUM is $145 trillion. That's six Americas, in terms of GDP. That's probably the largest TAM in human history. And the richest cohort in time and space, the boomers will pass on. So 50%, that's $70 trillion is about to change hands in the next 10 years to a cohort who are all digital natives. And will be still happy, the stats show, to pay 100, 180 basis points per advice, but they're going to want it totally on their terms. In other words, under their control, customized, and a little bit fleeter of foot in terms of settlement and migration and changing advisors than exists currently. So I don't think it's optional. I think we had robo advice, but that was a great strides were made with that, but it was a bit cookie cutter in its approach. I think, you know, I wouldn't articulate or advocate for personalization data to be tokenized in and of itself. But when that can be programmable and put in an aggregator alongside assets, you do have, through smart contracts, the ability to tailor outcomes a lot more closely. You know, if ISAs, for example, could be tokenized and the rules around them programmed as smart contracts, you know, the reason why the government is leaning in is this is a way to close the advice gap. So instead of needing $200,000 minimum liquid investable assets to be economically viable to an advisor, it might be $40,000, which, by the way, is the average US citizen's, you know, retirement life savings. So the government realizes that cheaper funds means effectively cheaper advice, not just cheaper advice, but more advice can be made available. And, you know, better life outcomes. So the government isn't altruistic. It's seeing fewer impecunious old people by closing the advice gap. They've been telling us this for a very long time. So tokenization can not only increase the possibility of personalization, it actually, people trust it because they're in control of their own tokens and data. It's on their phone, my tokens on my phone. And I think that gives them that combination of trust and personalization is actually the key equation, because I will then engage far more, you know, with my assets and my plans on the token level to get a better outcome for the right price. Today, I think 70% of inheritors sack their legacy advisor. So when you pull all these things together and the digital native thing, and, you know, the fact that Generation X and below are much more on their phone and much more seeking customization, you know, this is to my point about read, write, own, that control aspect. Is probably the first time in history that consumers and their advisors have been in total control of the design of the portfolio. And, you know, we've seen with the growth of model portfolios how popular those things are, and tokenization could really kind of turbocharge that. So I think it's a trend that sounds outrageously science fiction, but is actually happening right now.
No, I think I understand. It's about creating a digitized service which is fit for this transfer of wealth from boomers to Gen X and Gen Z. I think that's clear. Can I ask about one other term you've used a number of times in this conversation? That's the word aggregator, sometimes token aggregator. Can you explain to our members what you mean by that? Because it seems to me it has more than one meaning for you.
Yeah, it starts off as a fun supermarket, which we all remember, and are incredibly useful, you know. And I was around at the beginning of that industry, and, you know, if you think now that most mutual funds are bought through what is effectively a fun supermarket, you know, that's self-explanatory. And I think that's where aggregation begins. So we have a superpower, which is we're open architecture, not because we want to connect to as many blockchains as possible, but we want to have as many different fund tokens as are available. So that's what aggregation means, but it actually has an extension because, as I said, we're a network play, you know, and once we have a sufficient number of tokens in the aggregator, they can be made programmable with each other. Now, we're not an issuer of tokens, we're not regulated, we're a software company, we're a white label B2B software company. But we want to make it really easy and useful for issuers to issue and distributors to distribute. And I think the word aggregation is an ugly word, isn't it? And it doesn't really do justice. But it starts to speak to making all of that interoperable to a design that fits, let's say, you know, distributor one versus distributor two. And that's the promise, I think. So, you know, this is why we talk about commingling asset tokens and personalization tokens, because that's the way we get a customized result. So aggregation goes further than just being a supermarket. It's a bit like, you know, home shopping on Ocado. They deliver exactly what you want. It comes from a robot factory, a factory full of robot pickers powered by software. That's a similar analogy to what we're proposing for assets and portfolio construction.
You've said more than once that your goal here is to make it easy to issue and distribute these tokens, that you'll be doing all the work. Just on a narrow question, if I've understood your model correctly, you're not actually offering a client a tokenization engine. They'll have to find that somewhere else. But if you're offering to make it easy to issue and distribute, why doesn't it make sense for you to offer a tokenization engine service?
Yeah, that's a good question. Millions of dollars are being expended right now on tokenization. We're very close to many issuers. They're all doing it slightly differently. No one yet, I don't think, is building their own blockchain, for example. We've seen, we've seen Hyperledger Fabric, we've seen Stellar, we've seen Ethereum virtual machines like Aptos, Arbitrum, Avalanche. Polygon, a long, long list. We don't have a dog in that fight, if you all forgive that phrase, but because I think we're agnostic and that's our strength. So, and we've witnessed the speed with which, for example, Ethereum virtual machines have developed, and I think that will accelerate. So, we want our distributors to be able to get access to the best blockchain issued tokens available. So we don't want to constrain it. We don't want either to say to people who are thinking of issuing, you've got to do it this way, you've got to do it that way. I think that innovation will thrive. And we want to just say, when you're ready to issue, tell us where how you've done it, and we'll do that. Some, for example, in historically have issued with us on very low gas, low smart contract blockchain networks with omnibus wallets. Others are going down the segregated route, and so on. So we're not constraining, and I think we don't want to be a blocker. We want to say, when you've decided you want to issue and you've picked your blockchain, tell us how to connect to it safely and securely, and tell us how your consumers and their advisors want to access that.
A minute ago, you mentioned fund supermarkets, and like you, I've been around long enough to remember when these first came along. But I'm less optimistic than you are, perhaps, about what happened subsequently. It seemed to me that these fund supermarkets actually morphed into fund platforms, which were really whose real client was the fund distributors, not the end investors. And this prompted a thought in my mind. You also brought this word up, the word disintermediation, up. To what extent is and the connection here is that fund supermarkets became fund platforms, which were a form of re-intermediation rather than disintermediation. Is TokenBridge a disintermediation threat? If you're to achieve all the goals you want to reduce cost, complexity, risk in this system, are you going to be a disintermediation threat to the incumbents, to all those intermediaries who are out there? And maybe we can talk a bit about benefits you offer some of those intermediaries. But first question is, do you Should incumbents feel threatened by TokenBridge?
No, I don't think so. I really don't, because I think that, there's going to be a very long tail of demand for TradFi. As I said, as we said, somebody somewhere in Switzerland or Germany is settling a fund transaction by fax right now. Faxes haven't been disintermediated. Okay, they're used in a different way, email ditto. So I don't believe that actually for a moment. And that's not what we're advocating. What we are talking about is choice. So through widening choice, and we're only really talking about mainstream funds. And I don't think disintermediation is the word. In fact, if the economically viable cohort of people who can now afford advice widens from those who've got a minimum of $200,000 to those who've just got $40,000, we are literally talking about hundreds of millions, if not billions, more people on the planet who will now want to and can afford because of this level of automation advice. So I think that the industry will quintuple in size, not shrink. And I think that incumbents will play a significant role in that as well, with TradFi assets that just don't want to tokenize. I can't see that going away. We are quite a way off a central bank digital currency. So there's still a need, for example, for fiat currencies and general ledgers and the reconciliation of cash and stock on that basis. But I think, wouldn't surprise me in parallel if we started to see fund managers emerging who are token only. Mainstream funds, actively managed funds that now have a cost profile closer to ETFs and can trade in a similar way. You might see NAVs moving to be much more rapid. Here are fund managers having the ability to get back on term with ETFs for the first time in 20 odd years. So I think that what tokenization and removal of friction will do is actually vastly increase the size of the wealth market for all players. I don't see a disintermediation play in that.
Yeah, you've talked much more about what's going to stay the same in trade TradFi, and the market's going to grow and change won't happen rapidly because we don't have fiat currency on chain, and so all these reconciliation processes will go on for a while. You touched there just towards the end or towards an upside, a benefit for the incumbents in the ability maybe of mutual funds to keep up with ETFs, for example. But if we look at all the intermediaries in the industry, the fund accountants, which you talked about a minute ago, the transfer agents, keeping a register of who owns what, the depositories fulfilling the functions they've been given under the UCITS and AIFMD measures, the custodian banks, of course, who are looking after the underlying assets, then these fund platforms we talked about a minute or so ago, and of course the various fund distributors themselves, the banks, the wealth managers, the private banks, the IFAs, and so on. So you've got more than half a dozen intermediaries there. Do you have clear in your mind when you're in front of people like that, why are they going to gain from this, as opposed to it everything staying the same to see them out of their careers? By the time they retire, the system will not be transformed. But in the long run, what is the upside for fund accountants, TAs, custodians, fund platforms from what you're doing?
Yeah, well, what you've described, if I may, are legal functions as much as technical. So I can't see, for example, custodians disappearing in a hurry because the government needs a party with a balance sheet capable of making consumers whole where there's an issue, and ditto transfer agencies and asset services and so on. So I think if we live in a world, as I predict, where more people want more wealth advice and more wealth products, funds, because they've become more economically viable with less liquid investable assets, you're going to see more of those roles. And whilst they might not be entities with their own relational database in a stack, they might instead be nodes on a donut-shaped distributed ledger. They're all written into all the fund prospectuses that exist currently, and I think that they could continue if people wanted them to as nodes, as much as they can do as in discrete elements in a more vertical, stack. So I'm not sure is the answer. I think that it will take time in any case. All of the roles that you've talked about are professional in capability and they offer a service. Now, who's going to do that if they don't? So I think legally speaking, they're not going to go away in a hurry. I do think though that in terms of data, the promise of distributed ledger, a bit like the calendar, which is one of the first distributed ledgers, we all have equal access to it. It contains all the history that's ever gone before each block of time that's issued. We don't have to reconcile it. That's powerful, but calendars existed before they were distributed. It was just more frictional. So, I think there is still a role for all of those actors, but they may need to redefine themselves in terms of what their service proposition is. And I suspect that everyone will move up the value chain. And become, more useful, whether it's in legal terms or not, by using distributed ledgers. It's just there'll be less reconciliation required in all these instances.
Yes, they will survive in the short term as they because they need to, because they're needed, their legal functions, the functions they carry out cannot be replaced overnight. But you would expect their service offerings to evolve into something different. I don't know, a transfer agent doing a registrar today may end up reconciling, analog and digital fund registers initially, may find some entirely new role running a kind of blockchain-based register as well, and so on. So this is not what you're really saying to me is change is going to occur quite slowly here, and these organizations will have time to adapt.
Well, I think, yes, there are speeds here, though. I think that tokenization is a fact. It's happening right now. It's achievable, and the industry is ready to do that. But TradFi is going to be around for 20, 30 years, So there's the tail. It wouldn't surprise me in 5 years' time to see a mainstream of tokenized assets, capable of fully functioning and in their own right as tokens, and it being a token-only play. And that is one of our predictions, for mainstream retail investments and savings. But for the more esoteric things, look at private funds, alts, even now, run mostly on very antiquated technology. Could they be token? So it flips, doesn't it? Could those things that are hard for consumers to access currently, like hedge funds and private and alts, etc., if they were tokenized, would that mean that they could form a part of a model portfolio distribution to the extent that they haven't before? And this is, I'm actually saying, where more consumers can afford advice, more wealth products will be manufactured and sold. So, when I remember when the spreadsheet was introduced, everyone said, "Oh, this is the end of accountancy." Well, no, it turned out that it's 100 times bigger than it ever was, and everyone uses the spreadsheet. And I think that we'll see a similar thing with tokenization. It will just enable the industry to grow far bigger than it could do on its current tech.
Yeah, the concern is we just don't want to give people an excuse not to think about what the future could be like and how the future could be better. I mean, talking of which, you mentioned that a central bank digital currency is still a way off. Does that, I'm going to ask you a very specific question here now. Are you a, and maybe you can answer this as an abstract question as opposed to something which is practically achievable right now. Would the fund industry benefit from atomic settlement? I'm assuming here that we can have fiat currency on chain, whether it's a CBDC or a tokenized deposit or something else. But would the industry benefit from atomic settlement?
Yes, because it allows greater trust. If right now the industry's making do with a ramshackle collection of, fully collateralized private stable coins, great, and it doesn't stop atomic settlement happening through those stable coins. But if, well, I should qualify that by saying for mutual funds, because there isn't a secondary market or questions of, liquidity and collateral and exchange, this actually isn't a major issue. But if I want to buy a tokenized IAG share off you in the future, I'm sure you'd much prefer me to pay with a Bank of England issued digital pound than some intermediary. So you can see how that's just going to be better. I actually don't think there's a need for retail CBDCs. And I read, the Bank of England talking about payment mechanisms with retailers and consumers. I think that, if I may respectfully say, that's something of a red herring. I think that what we actually need is a wholesale CBDC. So, for example, for my ISA, I could, convert 20,000 fiat pounds from my high street bank account into 20,000 tokenized pounds so that I can use for my retail savings and investments transactions. I think that's the context. And then I could, well, when I go and buy a coffee, I'll convert it back to a digital money that I have right now. It's perfectly satisfactory. There's no need to create that layer of transformation. It's really just for the wholesale, for the transactional element of it.
Me talk a little bit about the wider environment you're launching this business into. One level, I guess, a technology vendor, software vendor. Who do you see as the competitors to Token Bridge? Is it companies like Wealth Wizards, or is it some of the more conventional vendors of, I don't know, mutual fund technology? Who are your competitors?
I think we have a lot of competitors. I think a lot of former crypto exchanges are retooling around regulated tokens such as fund tokens. For the record, we don't support any kind of cryptocurrency. We're interested in that. So I can see them emerging, over time. We also think some of the incumbents, have got fabulous networks and integrations running, and they could, easily work with us or alongside us or in their own right as another instance of this. Remember that, we're talking about personalization as a real useful add-on here. So I think that, there will be competitors emerging. I'm sure there are others out there right now. We're aware of a couple in the US as well. But our particular thing is open architecture and personalization. And I think at the moment, that's designed so that we can be really useful to consumers and their advisors. And I should stress that a lot of people are talking a lot about issuance, and I get that. We're talking almost exclusively about distribution and personalization. And so this is, I think, a slightly newer part of the market.
The Investment Association, which is the trade association for the UK asset management industry, has taken a quite intense interest in the possible benefits of tokenization of funds for its members. I don't know how carefully you've or whether you've had time to read its publications on this, but Is your sense that the work of the Investment Association on tokenizing funds is proceeding in the right direction?
Yes, I do. I think so. And we've watched what they've been doing. We're participating now as well. And I think that, you know, we would always encourage to talk about personalization to happen and distribution. And so I think that they have got themes around that emerging, and we're very supportive of that. I think, you know, issuance is underway, and I think distribution is the next chunky subject to discuss. So we would always encourage that conversation to happen. I think the Investment Association has been actually very, very helpful and useful in that respect.
A lot of what you've been talking about is really about updating. I appreciate your focus is wider than this, but it's about updating funds for the coming digitization of the entire investment and savings industry. And you sometimes hear people say that mutual funds in particular are an analog product in a digital age. Is that a statement you'd agree with? And do you have a clear vision of what the fund of the future will look like? I'm conscious I'm asking you to repeat some things you've said already, but this seems to be a live debate now about whether the funds industry can carry on as it is or whether it needs to be fundamentally reinvented. That's why the Investment Association is embarked on the investigations it has. And one reason for that need for change is because the economics of the industry are deteriorating. So they need to cut costs, they need to cut risks, they need to improve distribution, they need to personalize products. So would you go along with that? You know, we need to upgrade an analog product for the digital age?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't think many people wake up in the morning saying, I must go and buy a mutual fund. And I don't think that's ever been the case, nor will it be in the future. And I think, however, actively managed mutual funds, regulated, safe distribution of underlying, you know, careful management, track record, performance, you know, history. Those are all things that I would feel comfortable advising if I was an advisor to a consumer. And that remains the case. So I think whether or not they are paper certificates way back when, or units on a relational database, or tokens on a distributed ledger, I think that people still want to buy alpha, right? And they want to buy outcomes. And I am aware of the debate. And I think there's some really powerful, and Ian Hunt has got a great paper out there on the subject, you know, and I think it's a fascinating story. No, I think mutual funds will only increase, actually. I think if they become cheap, if the cost and friction is taken out through tokenization, more and more people than ever will want to be advised a mutual fund. Look at the growth in ETFs, you know, over 20 years. I think funds have been off the boil, actively managed mutual funds have been off the boil for that period. But if more people can afford advice, more funds are going to be sold. So we need more fund management and more advice, not less of either. And I think, you know, people get better financial outcomes as a consequence of that.
You mentioned Ian Hunt. Yes, he has a radical view of how the industry could evolve, and at the risk of making a mockery of the depth and complexity of what he's saying, the essence of his argument is that tokenization is going in the wrong direction right now, where we're in effect producing asset-backed tokens. So the asset continues, whether it's a financial asset or something else, continues to exist in the real world. And we're not going the whole hog. We're not having fully native tokens issued onto blockchains. And in his view, that means that the entire paraphernalia, we've talked about this already, of fund accountants, custodians, depositories, transfer agents, all of that remains in place. And so the costs remain in place. Not only that, but it also makes it very difficult to achieve the, you refer to better outcomes and the ability of investors to buy outcomes. And perhaps we can talk about that separately. But if we don't go the whole hog towards fully native tokenization, in Ian's view, we're not going to get the benefits. I don't know where TokenBridge sits in that debate between the radical Ian Hunt view and the more conservative Investment Association view that we must proceed cautiously. I mean, it's perhaps a religious discussion, but I wonder if you had a view on it.
We don't have a horse in that race, to twist my own analogy. So we would aggregate whatever tokens fund managers want to produce. We'd love to see the more radical ones emerge. I think they will do in due course. I think there will be. I think we did say that there will be token only fund managers, and I could see Ian's ideas being adopted wholeheartedly by them. And why not? And maybe there is about to emerge a fund that doesn't have, all of those actors that we talked about in the stack. And I could see that's viable now. That is actually viable. So I think, again, what tokenization has given our industry is a fresh breath of life. Now the how about a NAV every block? How about full, how about turning each of a prospectus's clauses, including concentration risk and cash management, into a clause, into a function of a smart contract, and totally automating all of that, paraphernalia or not? Automation is going to, surge like a riptide through what we do. And I think this is power to the arm of fund managers. They could go down Ian's route and go all the whole hog, or they could proceed cautiously. I think we're seeing both models emerging at the moment. Token Bridge's view is we'll aggregate them all. And we'd love to. And we'll also speak to the TradFi world, because we think that actually personalization is where this goes. And Ian's right on that point. The more that an investment product matches my, for example, or your preferences and outcomes, the more popular it's going to be. And we take the friction out and it's affordable. This is all good. Ledger tech doesn't change very often. I think the Venetians invented the double-sided ledger in 1974. I think it's a British computer scientist called Maurice Codd invented the relational database. And now Satoshi, by accident, has made distributed ledgers viable, even though we've had the concept for a long time, like a calendar. So in 600 years, not much has changed, but each one of those paradigm shifts was absolutely mind-expanding, and changed the way finance works completely. So I don't see why that couldn't be a possibility.
Can I tease you out a bit more on this outcome question? You've referred to better outcomes, the ability of investors to buy outcomes. You did just a second ago, but the Ian Hunt radical view isn't just that you'll get a better outcome than you would have had without any change. In other words, these intermediaries take less out of the investment returns than they might have done before. He is talking in his most radical version of asset managers actually undertaking to deliver particular outcomes. So they're saying, well, in I know 30 years' time, you need this amount of money to retire for 20 years successfully. We guarantee to give that to you. Now, that has huge implications for how the industry operates today. It has huge implications for how the industry capitalizes itself. Do you think that tokenization, as it evolves over the next 20 or 30 years, might actually start to encourage that kind of fixed outcome-based investing, or is this another dog race in which you don't have a dog, as it were?
Well, yeah, it is that. I mean, we're an aggregator, right? We're a software company and a white label one at that. We're not a fund manager. We're not an issuer. I mean, the only comment I'd make on Ian's thing is that, guarantees cost money. So someone somewhere is going to need to post the capital to meet the guarantee, as well as doing the activity of matching the liability to the goal. That being said, we're a software company. We'll aggregate these things. I think, look, artists stream music on iTunes, right? No longer have to go and buy a CD with six tracks on one side and six on the other. What Ian's talking about is very similar. So fund managers or fund management or asset management companies could stream alpha, right, to a tailored outcome. And if that tokenization can help that, and it does play a part, it's not everything, then yeah, that's possible. So I think that sort of futurology is really, really relevant. But I'll leave that to the expert asset managers and Dr. Hunt to tell us how that can actually work.
I'm not going to let you get away that easily on the futurology thing. I'll come back to ask you about your vision of the future in a second. Just on a narrow question before I do, you've said you're not a fund manager, you're not a fund distributor, you're a software company. Does that mean you're not regulated, or you are regulated? What's your regulatory status?
Yeah, so software companies can't be regulated. That being said, all of our issuer customers are regulated, and all of our distributor customers are regulated, and all of the things that they do are regulated. And in fact, we are still, even as a software company, caught by consumer duty, for example. So we think and act and behave as if we're regulated. If we're required to, we will become regulated. But our view at the moment is, as a white label B2B software company, we're not. I mean, I've spent my entire career in the regulated industry, so nothing has changed in that regard.
And you're not under pressure from those issuers to, they don't, you describe yourself as a software company, but actually your the reach is beyond simply selling people software and, charging them a subscription fee for using it. Actually, you're actually looking to transform the industry. You haven't yet had conversations with potential users saying, well, we're regulated, we'd like you to be regulated as well. That conversation simply hasn't arisen yet.
No, not yet. We have US attorneys. We've checked that we're not a venue either, for that matter. For example, we're not an exchange. We are deliberately and specifically positioning ourselves as a software aggregator. But if that arises and changes, then of course we'll be regulated. We're not offering crypto assets either, so we don't need to be registered with the FCA as such. We're not a direct consumer offering. I take your point though. As personalization tokens become more and more specific, then it wouldn't surprise me if that changed. We are never going to be an issuer of any token. That's our position. We're not going to compete with our own customers. So as long as that remains true, then we don't need to be regulated.
Stephen, this is my last question, and as I said a minute ago, I'd like you to give us a glimpse at the future as you see it. What do you think the funds industry, I'm talking narrowly of the funds industry here, what do you think it'll look like when the token bridge model is reaching, was reached full fruition?
Enormous, global, 5 times bigger than it is today. People getting great financial advice earlier in their lives and having transformed outcomes because of it. Personalization on the phone, customized ISAs, customized SIPs, and model portfolios literally, in every phone of every person on the planet. And that's before we've spoken about pensions, which are almost a perfect candidate for tokenization, particularly in the developing world where you have 2 billion people without any kind of pension. If that's tokenized, you take out corruption, friction cost. These are greenfield sites. So I can see also pensions being tokenized in the developing parts of the world as a very, very powerful use case. So completely transformed, 5 if not 10 times bigger, more financial advisors than ever. And consumers getting really good financial outcomes.
Stephen Ashurst, co-founder and CEO of TokenBridge. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to the members of Future of Finance.
You're welcome. Thanks, Dominic.